The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 412, recorded on February 7th, 2016. Welcome to the 412th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the Hello and welcome to the 412th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 245th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on... what is wrong with my tongue today? The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, yeah, as you might have guessed, we have a new podcast member. Trial basis. We'll try him for the next couple of months, and if he doesn't work out, we'll just toss him back. So,
I have bad opinions, so I've been told.
I don't care. We like bad opinions here. Just ask Paul, who is not here. When Paul is on here, he'll enjoy your bad opinions. And well, yeah. Anyways, we are recording on Super Bowl Sunday, and you know it's funny they're calling it Super Bowl 50 because I guess Super Bowl L has too many negative connotations. Yeah. So.
What? What's negative about the letter L?
Loss. Yeah. L stands for loss. Oh. It means loser.
We run this stuff in W's and L's.
But you know the funny thing is, next Super Bowl will be called Super Bowl Lee, you know? So I wonder, you know, what's it called? There'll be a lot of Chinese people who are very happy about it. Say, hey, they named the Super Bowl after me.
There's also going to be a ton of Gene commercials.
No, maybe that when it's Super Bowl 52, when it's L-I-I. Lee. And then it'll be Lee. And then it'll be Liv. And then Liv Tyler will be happy. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of news this past week. As a matter of fact, two news items popped up in the past 48 hours, which I didn't have time to include, and we really don't have time to talk about it. But we had another Kickstarter by Japanese developers, technically, because it was done by Playdeck, which is an American company, but it's Japanese developers, sort of like outsourcing it. And that hot new game that was Unsung Story, which was being made by, which is basically another, it was going to be a spiritual successor to Final Fantasy Tactics. They just said they're shelving it, and they don't know when they're gonna you know release it because they ran out of money and people left the development team in Japan, and yeah, so they have to make a few games to be able to fund and do the rest of the game, so they don't know when they're going to finish that one. And a lot of people, you know, name Righty, Yasumi Matsuno, you know, best known for Final Fantasy Tactics and Vagrant Story. You know, people, a lot of people, there's almost 16,000 people, and now they don't even know if they're going to get a game at all. Because, you know, and I know Scott is complaining about, well, you didn't actually back at Project Phoenix, did you?
No, I didn't. But I did look into it. I watched the video and how it started, and I was eager to follow it. Though what they said of the story, which was very little, but they said like an angel that has amnesia, and I was like, okay, cliche, I'm out.
So, but the thing is, at least now they must feel happier because at least they know they're going to get it in 2018.
Well, I mean, it could be worse. They could have went and spent all the Kickstarter money on booze and strippers.
Yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves. That's one of the news items. So no spoilers, you know. You probably told everybody that Han Solo was killed in The Force Awakens. So you came out of the theaters, hey, Han Solo got killed.
It was related.
You know, the thing is that everybody knew Han Solo was going to get killed because Harrison Ford wanted nothing to do with Star Wars. As a matter of fact,
he's in the next two movies, so go figure.
He said he wanted to get killed off in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, he wanted the Ewoks to kill him, yeah.
Or, actually, you know, apparently the Ewoks are cannibals. It's not cannibals if you're eating other species. They eat people, so maybe he would have gotten eaten by the Ewoks. There's a way to go.
Well, they were going to at least sacrifice him to C-3PO until C-3PO started floating around.
Well, they were going to sacrifice him and eat him. Yeah. Maybe they should have had maybe Luke should have waited and said, you know, I want Leia all to myself.
They just ate the stormtroopers. That's, you know, that's what they did. That's what they were doing at the Grand Feast. They were eating stormtroopers.
And they played their helmets like a xylophone, yes. Oh, actually, actually, I preferred Yub Yub to that music, you know. Yub Yub, you know, that song?
Yeah.
The one they removed? I actually liked that song.
You know, I've seen Harrison Ford in interviews, and he just seems like the kind of guy that would want all of his characters to die at some point, just to steal joy from the world.
Did you see him in, a lot of people didn't, but in Ender's Game, he looked bored and he didn't want to be there.
I bet you more than anything he wanted that character to die.
You know, Adam Sandler, now his films, he looks too bored and he doesn't want to exit his trailer like it in Pixels. He was miserable. Bruce Willis doesn't want to do Die Hard. He looks miserable.
What's up with all these miserable old men? Jeez.
And the other news was actually tonight, there was a tease from Forbes about what to expect from Titanfall 2, and apparently there's going to be a little bit of magic. It's going to be science and magic mixed together. So that's interesting. But they're, quote-unquote, keeping it grounded and dirty and human and real. So.
Yeah, it seemed like one of those things that was like a perfect amalgamation of Call of Duty and like MechWarrior Online, but I never got to it because it was only Xbox One.
I played it, and you know the thing is, it was fun, but I didn't play it for long. I mean, it didn't grab me like I thought it would. I mean, the game that grabbed me is Plants vs. Zombies, and Garden Warfare, that is. And that is really, really fun, even though the scientist's freeze gun is way overpowered. I mean, you freeze the end. It doesn't matter if it does a little bit of damage because someone else is going to swoop on you. So we'll see about that. So, what have you been playing, Scott?
Civ 5 in Minecraft, although I did play a little bit of Garry's Mod just to mess around. It's a really
Whoa. Yeah. You were using Garry's Mod? For what?
A little bit, yeah.
Were you making a webcomic or something?
No, we were just doing this game called Prop Hunt, where you hide, where a player hides as a prop, and then the other players go around beating the stuff up, trying to find which prop is actually a player. That's just one of the games that has.
That sounds a lot. You know, there's a game which I'm really looking forward to, and I can't wait for it to come out. And that's Spy Party. You know, Spy Party. Okay,
I haven't heard of it.
In one person is an assassin with a sniper rifle, and the other person is a spy. And basically, it's an anti-Turing test thing in which the player has to act like the AI in order to do his tasks while the sniper is watching. And the sniper is looking for that player to make a slip-up to say, oh, that's the human. He's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's called Spy Party, and
now I remember that. Yeah, that sounds interesting. Like the whole blend. It's got kind of a Hitman element, doesn't it?
Where... No, it's more like of an Assassin's Creed multiplayer.
Oh yeah, you're right.
I was really good at that too. I dominated Assassin's Creed multiplayer for the few hours that I played it. I'm gonna guess what me and TJ have been playing, and that's XCOM 2. I haven't been playing it marathon. I'm actually on my third campaign because I keep it's like, oh, wait, I screwed up. You have to go back to the beginning, and I'm going to have to start over. That's not to say I'm not having fun. It's just that I screwed up. And I'm still learning the stupid mechanic of the, what do they call it, the dark event counter.
Uh-huh.
And I'm still trying to figure out how do I, you know, I mean, I figured out in my previous game how to get to it, but then I said, you know, I better do this from the start and see if I can do it better, you know. That's one thing about XCOM 2, it's lacking in terms of tutorial. You know, it'll tell you some things, but basically you're on your own in that game. You're really on your own. It'll give you some hints and how the tactical fighting works, but the metagame in which you're flying this ship all over the place, you know, you have to keep sure that you have enough communications, you have to have enough energy, you have to have enough this, you have, what's going on, in order to contact these people, you have to have intel, and then you have to have intel and money, and then you have to go to a black market to sell the stuff that you have, you know, and all this stuff is going on. I mean, XCOM was simple compared to this game. This game is like, you're going to need a... This is one of those games which I really wish they had a thick Sid Meier-esque manual, you know?
Oh, I miss manuals.
Yeah. And this seems like sort of a response to people saying, oh man, XCOM Enemy Unknown was simplified comparatively speaking to the original stuff. And it was like, all right, well, we'll give you everything.
Nice.
Oh, dear God. It, you know, I was also a little bit shocked that my PC could only run on the minimum settings. I mean, I did jack up some of the other stuff, but it still looks great. And actually, when I had it on max settings, it didn't look that much better. But this game is a resource hog, too. I mean, the load times are really long.
I did auto detect settings on my my system, and it put them at low, and I moved them up to medium, and it still worked fine. So I don't know.
Yeah, I prefer smoothness, so I kept it at low, but I jacked up all the textures. I jacked up, on max, the things that I care about. I don't care about if there's jaggies or not. I'm not that kind of person.
Yeah. I also found that similar with Fallout 4. It said like I had minimum requirements. I met the minimum requirements, but then I could still put my settings all the way to ultra, and the game ran fine.
Yeah, I mean, I did that too. I ran it on ultra, and it was fine as well.
Yeah,
but then again, it didn't say minimum. It's sort of more like highish. I said, screw it. I'm just going to put it all on high.
I really dig how much customization they gave you in this one, too. I was telling you about this earlier.
And they don't dole out all at once. You have to earn that stuff. If you want your character to have a nose ring, you have to be at fourth level.
Yeah. And I was telling you about this earlier. I really like that you can really just go in there and make every character your own character. I spent so much time on that, and I'm going to be really upset when any of my standout squad dies. But what?
You can save those. You can save those settings.
I did. Believe me.
So you don't have to worry about losing the look of the character. Just see, I didn't go that far into. I will say this now. TJ here decided to give his people all these elaborate histories.
Oh, yeah.
Because it has the information. What did they do before? I did give my dead their own epitaphs. That's about as far as I go in terms of that area.
Well, that's nice of you.
Yeah. XCOM. Go buy it.
And
XCOM 2, I mean.
That's not all I've been playing, though. The other one I've really been hitting on hard, and you'll hear me talk about this later, is Rainbow Six Siege. I really enjoy that game. It's probably the most positive team-based community I've played with in a while, because it's what you come to expect from Rainbow Six Siege.
The thing about Rainbow Six Siege is that it's gotten so much shit that the players are terrified of seeming like a-holes, so they're always nice to each other, so that say, hey, we have a great community, even though everybody's talking trash about our game, we're going to show them by showing what a great community we have. Because it's sort of like if you're infighting, it's going to be like, oh dear, people are going to see that and say, oh, see? It's not that great a game because the people are infighting and all that stuff.
Well, there's that, and then there's the fact that Rainbow Six games have always been this thing where you take one bullet in the wrong place and you're dead. And when matches are probably about...
Are you doing PvP or PvE?
It's always PvP for me. They have a PvE in that game, but it's very limited compared to the PvP.
By the way, from what I understand, all the feedback I'm getting from Tom Clancy's Division is that it's amazing. Unfortunately, it's also extremely hackable on the PC and Xbox One. And because you know what Ubisoft did? Oh, they did the Sony thing in which you have your own server. What's it called? It's not their Ubisoft servers. You're playing on people's servers, and it's that's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
That's a recipe for disaster. You got Ubisoft. Open your wallets, pay for your own servers like everybody else does. That's why EA does it. That's why Microsoft does it. Because you can't cheat when the publishers own the servers.
Right.
Ubisoft, stop being so cheap. They're being cheap on everything lately. And the thing is that they have this really, really good game, the Division, and people have to wait for Division 2 for Ubisoft to have their own servers, because there's no way they could... They say, well, it's going to be different. Yeah, it's coming out in a month and a half. There's no way you're going to be able to change it by then.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like a lot of fun, but yeah, there seems like a lot of room for not so fun when you look at it like that.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is to have your own private games, but what's the point of that? You want interaction with the rest of the world.
Yeah.
We're bringing back the gaming flashback because it's been like a year or so since we did it. Maybe even three. I don't know. I haven't done this in a dog's age.
Yeah, it feels like that long.
I mean, well, here's the thing. The last game we did, well, it must be 3 years ago because gaming flashback is a 10-year thing in which you can't do anything newer than 10 years. And the last thing we did was Psychonauts. Oh, that was 2005, so maybe a year. So anyways, this is a big one, and I'm pretty sure you guys have played it. Yeah. You know, even if they didn't like that genre of game, they played it. This is a game that everybody played whether they wanted to or not, because you were supposed to play it and like it, damn it.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is one of the few Xbox 360 games that I actually got all, you hit the total achievements. Gaming Flashback, The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion. So The Elder Scrolls Oblivion is an action role-playing video game developed by Bethesda Game Studios and published by Bethesda Softworks and Take-Two Industry. Take-Two Interactive, I mean. It's the fourth installment of The Elder Scrolls action fantasy video game series following Morrowind. Oblivion was first released in March 2006 for Microsoft Windows and Xbox 360, and the PlayStation 3 was shipped in March 2007. Development for Oblivion began in 2002, directly after the release of Morrowind. To design the graphics, Bethesda used the improved Havok physics engine, high dynamic range lighting, procedural content generation tools that allowed developers to quickly create detailed terrains, and the Radiant AI system, which enabled non-player characters to make choices and engage in behaviors more complex than past titles. I'm going to call bullshit on that. Those NPCs, no. I mean, maybe the NPCs had things to do, but yeah, they weren't all that great, even for 2006. Anyways, the story begins with a player imprisoned in a cell for an unknown crime. Emperor Uriel Septim VII, accompanied by his imperial bodyguards known as the Blades, arrive in prison, fleeing from assassins who have murdered the Emperor's three sons and now targeting him. The Emperor and the Blades reveal that the player's jail cell contains a secret entrance to part of the city's sewer system that functions as an escape route. I will say this, you know, every friggin' Elder Scrolls game starts with your character in prison, or being transferred to a prison, or being executed. You're always an outlaw. And, of course, we all know that Uriel Septim VII is Patrick Stewart, because he tells you, "You're the one I've seen in my dreams." You know, and it sounds like Captain Picard saying it. All but one of the Blades are cut down by the fighting that ensues. Knowing he's destined to die by the hands of the assassins, Uriel Septim entrusts the player with the Amulet of Kings, warned by the Septim Emperors of Tamriel, and orders the player to take it to a man named Joffrey, the Grand Master of the Blades, at Winning Priory. Immediately afterward, one of the assassins kills the Emperor. The player escapes the sewer and heads out into the open world of Cyrodiil. Let me ask you a question. How many... I did not. Who actually went straight to Joffrey?
I didn't.
Once I got out, that was it. I was wandering around.
I went exploring, and there's a lot to explore. The city is huge, and then the countryside is just vast. And I got killed by a skeleton in a crypt that apparently I wasn't ready to face.
I'll tell you what I did as soon as I got out. I went straight for that Thieves Guild.
Yeah, and they also have the Assassin's Guild, in which you have to murder someone without anybody seeing it. You'd think no one saw it, but the Assassin's Guild saw you do it.
I'll tell you what, Elder Scrolls IV, best iteration of the Thieves Guild. I love Skyrim, but I think it's Grey Fox? Or who is the leader?
The Grey Fox, yeah. Yeah.
One of the most compelling characters in all of Elder Scrolls, if you ask me.
And, you know, I was able to do all those murders, what's it called, by accident. You know, because what they have you do, that's the Assassin's Guild. Assassin's Guild wants you to kill people, but you have to make it all look like an accident. And I was really good at doing that. As a matter of fact, they have that that 10 little Indians plot in which you have to kill these people at a party one by one by one by one without them noticing. I only did that for the achievements, though. I really didn't like being a murderer. Well, maybe a little bit. The thing I like to do in Skyrim... I mean, the thing I like to do in Oblivion, and also Skyrim, and also Morrowind, and also Daggerfall, is to see what I could get away with, you know? Until someone yelled, "Halt, filthy swit!" That was in Morrowind, because there were a lot of cat people there. Or, no, it was Oregonians who did that. But yeah, I mean, moving on, The Elder Scrolls Knights of the Nine was an official expansion for Oblivion, released on November 21st, 2006. The plot of the Knights of the Nine centers on the rise of the Sorcerer King, Umaril, and the player's quest to defeat him at the aid of the Lost Crusader's relics. Although it made little change to the basic mechanics of Oblivion, it was judged by the reviewers to be a brief but polished addition to the game's main plot. The next expansion everybody knows, which is Shivering Isles, which was released on March 27th, 2007. It was released for everything, and it offered more than 30 hours of new adventuring, featuring new quests, voice acting, monsters, spells, armor, and expanded freeform gameplay. It featured a new land that players could watch according to their life or death decisions. The Shivering Isles takes place in the Realm of Madness, ruled over by the Daedric Prince Shiograth. Shiograth. The player is tasked by Shiograth with saving the realm from an approaching cataclysm known as the Grey March. That, by the way, that was the one part of Oblivion that I didn't enjoy. Was going into Oblivion and having to do that stupid quest to prevent. I mean, it was really cool the way that machinery came out of that reverse black hole, but actually shutting down the Oblivion rifts wasn't really all that fun. You know, everything else was fun, but that wasn't.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like
So. What was the most memorable moment of Oblivion that you had?
I'll tell you something interesting about Oblivion. Like, here's my major experience with Oblivion. I spent about probably 40 hours playing that game.
That's it?
And probably for about the first 30 hours, I did not know... Because I didn't have the booklet that came with it, and I must have missed it at some point when it told it to me. I didn't know that you slept to level up.
So for
30 hours of that game, I was like leveling up my skills. And I'm like, you know, I don't feel like I'm actually getting that much stronger, but you know, whatever. It's telling me, hey, you're up at this.
The thing is that since everything leveled up with you, it's like, you know, and that was one of the controversial things, and they actually made mods for that to stop that, because in that game, everything leveled up with you, you know, so that it was never too hard. You know, maybe they had more abilities, but it was never too hard for you.
I just remember there was a point where I was on the Shivering Isles and things were one-hitting me, and I would have to, like, go back to saves 30 or 40 times just to, like, figure out a way past this. And then I slept for, like, one time on chance, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is how it works. What have I been doing this whole time?
Well, like I said, the finding that tomb, all, you know, just going out, exploring, it felt like this is what the whole Elder Scroll was about, just getting lost and finding new stuff and not even having to worry about the main quest, you know. And so I found this tomb, and the skeleton, who was this rinky-dink thing, who just kicked me, just kicked my ass real easily. And so I don't know, a lot torn about that game.
Everybody loved Oblivion chiefly because there were no cliff racers in it.
Mm.
No cliff racers. I will say this, though. Oblivion cured me of having to do anything in the Elder Scrolls universe ever again. Because I played Skyrim, and I played it a little bit. By a little bit, I mean 40 hours, and I just stopped. It's like, no, I'm done. You know, I like Fallout. I'll stick with Fallout when I'm not going to do Skyrim anymore. I'm not going to do Elder Scrolls anymore. By the way, it's about time for Bethesda to announce The Elder Scrolls 6 at E3, which they're probably going to do, because it's out right on
schedule. I think they're going to finish the DLC before they announce next...
They're gonna announce it at E3. They're going to have something about it. Even if it's just a teaser.
I really do hope they move away from Elder Scrolls Online, because just... I don't know.
That was a different... not studio, but different development team that worked on that. I forgot what the name was.
You know, Elder Scrolls Online, you know, as criticized as it was on launch, it's actually starting to come into its own now. And I know a lot of people who are playing it right now and enjoying it. So
There's a thing about, like, Bethesda titles to me, and I know this isn't an opinion that everyone has, but I think, you know, the point of a Bethesda title is that you shape the world around you with the actions that you commit. And they've done a really great job of making your actions have waves in those games. And I think the idea of, like, an MMO sort of diminishes that idea.
Yeah, because everybody needs to have the same experience.
Well, here's the thing.
Have the opportunity.
All these Elder Scrolls games are just single-player MMOs to begin with. That's what all they are. They have the same fetch quests, too.
Yeah.
You know, go here, talk to this person, get me back this, you know. I mean...
If you're gonna call the Elder Scrolls an MMO, then all the RPGs are MMOs.
No, Elder Scrolls by itself, it's an open world MMO. It feels like an MMO. You know, it's just
it really
feels
doesn't.
Like one. It just feels like one. It has all the beats of an MMO. You go to someone, you know, they might as well have a question mark hovering above their head.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You know, I mean, was there much of a difference between Elder Scrolls Online and an Elder Scrolls game? I don't think so.
Yes.
And, you know, this is why I hate Dragon Age Inquisition so much, because I know for a fact it was supposed to be an MMO. Supposed to be a multiplayer-only game, and then John Riccitiello was fired, and all his edicts that all EA games had to have a multiplayer aspect or be a multiplayer were removed, and they said, screw this, we're going back to single-player. But the problem is that the entire structure of Dragon Age Inquisition is that of a multiplayer game, because it's not, you can feel when you're walking around your base, it's so difficult to navigate because it's an MMO, you know? You're walking through something like a World of Warcraft city rather than, you know, an actual city in which you could just quickly go up, and, you know, you don't have those fun, you know, there isn't as much dialogue between you and your party members, which I missed in, at least in Dragon Age 2, they were able to maintain that. But I know, you know, a lot of people love Dragon Age Inquisition. I just can't stand it.
Yeah.
It's boring, and I didn't find Dragon Age Origins boring, but I did find Inquisition boring. So, anyways, any last thoughts before we move on?
Yeah, I wasn't interested in Dragon Age Inquisition, so...
Were you interested in Dragon Age at all?
Not totally, really.
See, here's the thing. Dragon Age 2, with all its faults, I still enjoyed the story, right?
Yeah, I'm more of a Baldur's Gate fan, so that's why I like staying away from the 3D stuff and stick to more isometric RPGs.
You must be thrilled with the 3.0 update coming to Pillars of Eternity, because it's going to add a crap ton of stuff for free.
Yep.
Including a story mode, which I might be interested in which combat is way, 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 way easy. It's only for people who don't care about the combat. They just want to deal with the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing about Oblivion, is that they, and this is a problem with their games too, they focus a lot on character interaction and things changing depending on your actions better than anybody. The problem is it also makes it really, really complicated, and that's why their games are so buggy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when a 3.0, and also I know you're also looking forward to the White Marches Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
So, how about you, TJ? Do you play Pillars of Eternity?
I haven't.
Do you like isometric RPGs like Baldur's Gate and Pillars of Eternity and stuff?
I do like Baldur's Gate, and I loved Dragon Age Origins because it reminded me of that Baldur's Gate feel. As far as like Dragon Age goes, I think that's what kind of turned me off to most of the Dragon's Age that came after Origins, is that it was very much like Mass Effect, but the transition between Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2, where it went to this more action eccentric feel.
Yeah, but you see, with Mass Effect 2, it worked, because Mass Effect 2, there's a lot of guns in it. And
definitely.
You know, in Dragon Age, it's a lot of melee weapons. I mean, you have spells and you have archery, but actually, you know, I don't think I ever used any ranged weapons in Dragon Age, ever.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing is that, yeah, I had the cheat codes in the first two games, so once you had that thing that killed everything in the area, made it a lot better, a lot faster. I already did the combat. I don't need the combat anymore. I just want to play it for the story now.
It definitely felt like EA seeing the success of Mass Effect 2 and turning to BioWare and say, hey, you guys did great when you did like more action in your games. You should do that with Dragon Age.
Well, the real problem is that they went to DICE, and they said, hey, why don't you put your engine in Dragon Age Inquisition, even though it really doesn't work for RPGs? You know, what was it? Frostbite. The Frostbite engine. The Frostbite engine was used for Dragon Age Inquisition, and that also removed all the cheat codes that I liked a lot.
Yeah.
So, when you go to the console, there's nothing there. Anyways, you were saying, because I interrupted you, you said you liked Dragon Age and you liked Baldur's Gate. I think that was all you said.
Oh yeah, I was just making that comparison. I felt like Dragon's Age 2 was definitely a effect of Mass Effect 2's success.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next time. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, game news. Mac and Linux versions of Batman Arkham Knight canceled. This is from Game Watcher. It shouldn't come as a shock to anyone that Warner Brothers has announced that Mac and Linux versions of Batman Arkham Knight have been canceled, since the regular Windows version suffered not one but two buggy launches and still has major issues even now. Warner Brothers posted in Game's Steam community forum that we are very sorry to confirm that Batman Arkham Knight will no longer be coming to Mac and Linux. If you have pre-ordered Batman Arkham Knight for Mac or Linux, please apply for a refund via Steam. There was little chance Rocksteady was going to be able to add additional platforms for the game when the studio couldn't get the PC version right. Batman Arkham Knight was first launched on Steam 23rd June 2015, got pulled, then re-released on 28th October.
Yeah, so go ahead, TJ. I know you want to say something about this.
Warner Brothers hates PC.
Well, it's not that they hate... Well, apparently they hate Mac and Linux, too. I don't know what the problems were, where it was lead developed, because this all goes back to the fact that the PC version was so badly botched. And here's the thing that puzzles me, is that it was released a couple of months after the console version. So what happened during that time, between then and June 23rd, that was, you know, what were they doing? I mean, the problem with PC, of course, is that it's not a standardized machine. You know, every Xbox One is the same, every PlayStation 4 is the same, every PC is not the same.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it should be relatively easy to port. Even just do a regular old port, and I know they wanted to make the PC version of Batman Arkham Knight special. You know, you could always port the Xbox One over to the PC because they have the same basic architecture. I know they wanted everything to be in 4K. Remember, it was 4K.
Yeah.
Anisotropic lighting and all that stuff. But, you know, before you go to 4K, how about just getting 1080p right?
Yeah, that's the thing, too, is that they came out so many different times and said, hey, we fixed it this time, and put it back on the market. They did that whole stunt where they went ahead and took all the old reviews and changed them to pre-release reviews, and then they released a game that was still buggy. And it's like, what are you doing to yourself, man? This is not good PR.
I'm just trying to, you know, I wonder how much of this is Rocksteady and how much of this is Warner Brothers. Because remember, Rocksteady is the one who's making fixes for the game. And did Rocksteady tell Warner in June or May, like, hey, this isn't going to be finished anytime soon? And they said, no, release it now. We got to release it on June 23rd, come hell or high water. Because that's what our bean counters say, we must release it. Or did Rocksteady lie and say, hey, everything's great and hunky-dory and, you know, it works well on our computer, so it should work well on everybody else's computer, you know? What I'm glad about is that, see, the thing about Batman Arkham series is I think they were going in the wrong direction. And I actually told Rocksteady this in person, too, at E3, is I'm not really feeling it with the open-world Batman. I mean, Batman Arkham Asylum, the first game, was linear. I mean, it allowed you to go in different places, by the way. It allowed you to break sequence. You know, it was open world to a point, but all the sequences were in order, right? You had to do this, then this, then this, then this, then this. And it told a stronger story. In Batman Arkham City and Batman Arkham Origins and Batman Arkham Knight, I just felt lost. I mean, I just felt like the story is making no sense. You know, I prefer a linear story to an open world story. I mean, I love the story of Fallout 4, but even that, you know, had sort of a linearity to it. You know, I mean, you could go off the rails a little bit and come back, but in Arkham, you given all these missions to do, you can do this type of mission, this type of mission, this type of mission, this type of mission, and there was no guidance, you know. And there's other problems with it as well, but I'll let you guys put in your two cents before I get into it.
Arkham City was probably my favorite one in the series, and I think
the Deathstroke fight with Deathstroke was actually interesting, unlike Batman Arkham Knight.
that was Arkham Origins, though, wasn't it?
No, wait, didn't he appear in City, too? No, that was Shiva. No. Shiva appeared in City. She appeared in both, by the way. It was Ra's al Ghul with the swords, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in Arkham Origins, okay, the fight with Deathstroke was actually interesting.
I liked Arkham City the most because, it was sort of open world, but at the same time, it did a good job of guiding you to what it wanted you to do. And you had this whole city that you could explore and check around in and find cool stuff. But at the end of the day, you always had that objective to go towards.
Scott?
Yeah, it sounds good, I don't know what's going on with Rocksteady. They can't seem to release a good game. I mean, maybe they need to take more time.
I will say this, game. Origins was not developed by Rocksteady, though. That was not a Rocksteady game. That was someone else.
Right, but I meant, so maybe I guess it needs to go back to that company that did it in the first place, then.
Well, no, it was Rocksteady for the first two games. Then they went to someone else, I forgot who. Then they went back to Knight. Now, the other thing, of course, that really annoyed me was the fact that you did not have the Predator missions or the... I forgot what they called them. Where you just fight Predator and... Anyways, you had to buy them separately.
Yeah.
God, the stuff that was free in the first two games, and I didn't care. There was no... That was the only real way you were going to play with Nightwing or Robin or whatever was during those Predator missions or those combat missions. But in the game, it was like, oh, these little short segments with them. Hey, you enjoy that? That's fine.
I don't like the DLC crap.
Yeah, they now made the... instead of doing the Mona Lisa, they did the hamburger. The hamburger analogy for DLC now. In which you used to get a hamburger, and the expansion was the fries, and the expansion... No, the fries came with it. The expansion were two other types of burgers. Now you pay for the buns and you have to pay for the lettuce. You have to pay for the lettuce separately. You have to pay for the meat separately. You have to pay for the onion separately. You have to pay for the ketchup separately.
Yeah, there's a really funny meme picture that shows a picture of the Mona Lisa.
Yes, that's what I was referring to. I mean, that's the one they started a new one with a hamburger. Okay.
Yeah, I really hate the whole slicing and chopping up the game, and it just feels really cheap when they do that. And right now, like with Fallout 4, I'm expecting decent DLC to come at least.
Well, that's Bethesda, though. Bethesda has, and they really hit it out of the park with the DLC mm-hmm. for Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas. I mean, those were really meaty. Well, one of them wasn't. Mothership Zeta was not. But the rest were pretty meaty,
Oh, yeah. Honest Hearts in New Vegas all the way. I know that's not everybody's favorite, but learning about the Burning Man and exploring that dude was freaking awesome in New Vegas.
Yeah. So the thing is, I hope this is the... Well, see, here's the thing. I would not be disappointed if they never made another Batman Arkham game again.
I have not a question.
I'm done with him.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I think it would be interesting to see... I think we talked about this before, Jonah, but a more investigative Batman.
Yeah, like, Batman the detective. I mean, they tried that with Knight. It was with Origins, I think, because if I remember, was it Origins that... No, it was Knight. Knight, because they retold the story of the Killing Joke. So you had to use your detective skills to find Barbara and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what's going to be the Telltale Games Batman, is in which you have to be, because there's not much action you can do in an adventure game.
Yeah.
So you were going to say, TJ?
I really am not willing to put all of the blame on Rocksteady for this, because there's another example of a Warner Brothers game that's just freaking flopped on PC, and that's Mortal Kombat X.
Oh, I think that's for a different reason, only because it came out so long after. And also, there's not going to be any DLC for Mortal Kombat X PC, so a lot of people are staying away from it, because why bother?
But it's like Mortal Kombat X had a spotty PC launch too, and now they're pulling pulling the entire carpet out from under PC players for that game.
No DLC, screw you. Which is great news for Microsoft, because then they'll just, hey, look at Killer Instinct, it's free.
Yeah,
and Killer Instinct is really good. I just found out they're going to be including the Arbiter from Halo as a downloadable character for Killer Instinct. That ought to be interesting.
It's just something I have to point to is that it could be coincidence, but Arkham Knight and Mortal Kombat X, both Warner Brothers published.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. I think Rise of the Tomb Raider is pretty stable, and it's also supposed to be one of the most beautiful games you can play on PC. So it is possible, you know, to release a relatively bug-free product on, you know, port on PC. And I will say, you know, they're saying that Rise of the Tomb Raider is the best Tomb Raider of the entire series, including the first one.
I believe it. It looks gorgeous.
And also, the gameplay, it goes back to when you're actually Tomb Raiding.
Oh, yeah, there's actually tombs in the Tomb Raider again.
Yeah, so, you know, I still haven't played through the first Tomb Raider. You know, I got it free, and all that's been happening is I see Lara get beat up a lot. Not by other people, but by the world. She's constantly falling and hitting her head against rocks, and it's just like this poor girl is a klutz, but a dangerous klutz, and she's going to kill herself because she can't walk on two legs.
Do you suppose they were watching, like, previews for The Revenant when they were making this game with the bear and everything?
I don't know. The Revenant isn't that good, by the way.
But it does have that bear.
Yeah, it's humping Leonardo DiCaprio. I know it's not, but it looks like it. It looks like it. Watch the movie, folks, and watch the bear and Leonardo. And there's one part in which it just looks like it's doggy style.
If that had been the case, I definitely actually would have watched that movie.
Anyway, Leonardo, by the way, screwed himself out of an Oscar win by his behavior with the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we'll move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. 22-year-old esports FIFA gamer signed by professional football club. If there's any evidence that esports gaming is becoming more mainstream, a professional football club has signed an esports FIFA player, 22-year-old David Bythaway. I don't know if I said that right. I hope so.
Bythaway. It's a very British name.
To be one of its esports gaming representatives. Bythaway, who started playing Electronic Arts football game professionally when he was 17, had represented the UK in FIFA Interactive World Cup championships in Las Vegas, New York, and Rio de Janeiro. Now he will represent VFL Wolfsburg in Germany. The young gamer naturally remains gobsmacked at being asked to represent a real footy club. It's absolutely massive for me that a team like Wolfsburg have gotten involved with gaming, Bythaway said in an interview. It's just something that I was doing at home to start with, just playing with my friends and wanting to be the best out of them, and all of a sudden I'm part of a football club. VFL Wolfsburg is unusual compared to other clubs in that it's actually owned by Volkswagen and covers other sports, including badminton, handball, and athletics. Its players are literally employees of the car company, as is Bythaway now. He even gets his own Wolfsburg jersey and number. Like any footballer, Bythaway has to train. I always try to get in at least 4 to 6 games a day, but you don't want to play too many people because then you give away your secrets, so you stick with between 1 or 2, and then you have to wait for them to come online. He also notes that he has to play people around your own skill level for training to be any good. Bythaway thinks this is a turning point for esports. It'll be interesting to see how much push this story gets in mainstream sporting press.
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, oh, I'm great at MLB The Show, and the Yankees sign you to be their ringer for their PlayStation 4 competitions. It's really strange.
Yeah, it's I fail to remember a time when a story came out that a actual sporting group was signing someone to represent them in esports. Like, you hear about them, like, with the MLB The Show, but has it ever been, like, a story before?
No, I don't think – the thing is that, you know, I didn't even know that FIFA was part of esports, although I should have sort of guessed at that, you know, since, you know, everything has their own esports competitions these days.
It's kind of amazing, and it points to a shift. Like, you heard about ESPN getting involved in this, and that was kind of sort of the point where, yeah, wow –
And what's his name? That a-hole from ESPN2. I forgot his name. It's not It's not it's not Stephen A. Smith and what's his face. It's the other guy who left ESPN recently.
Yeah.
Shoot. You know, now I can't remember his damn name, and he's one of the worst sportscasters on TV, and I can't remember his name. Anyway, he really laid into it. He said he couldn't imagine anybody wanting to watch this sort of stuff, esports, and because I think they were showing, I don't think it was League of Legends, and I don't think it was Dota. I think it was a different type of MOBA. Maybe it was League of Legends. I don't know. But anyway, he was tearing into it, saying he could imagine how anybody could ever watch this sort of stuff. You know, not knowing that each broadcast has 2 million viewers. You know, Oh, shoot. Anyways, continue on, because I'm going to remember his name in a moment. I just know
sounds like he pulled a Jimmy Kimmel. I think Jimmy Kimmel was saying something similar. He got chewed out over on Twitter about it. And he even said, oh, I'm sorry, guys. Don't hate me.
But it wasn't Jimmy Kimmel, though.
Colin
Cowherd. That's right. Colin Cowherd. Yeah. That's the guy who – he doesn't care. He likes to stir up trouble anyway. But he just – you know, he sounded like an old man. You know, it's like, get off of my lawn. You know, that sort of old
man. Okay, Grandpa.
You know, it's like, this is what the kids like now.
But it's an amazing thing because, like, if this works out for them – then other people will follow suit. And if other people follow suit, then it will move not just from the FIFA, but, you know, we have sports like the Electronic Arts owns a lot of sports franchises, Madden.
Yeah, that's why EA, by the way, bought Major League Sports. Was it Activision? No, Activision bought it. Activision bought Major League Sports so that they could do their Call of Duty championships on Major League. And because the thing is that Major League Gaming was just tanking. It had like $40 million in debt. You know, the ESL was outstripping it, and Activision bought it out, and the shareholders are pissed because they won't see a dime of it because it was all paid to pay the debt.
Yeah.
So, you were saying?
Yeah, and it's like amazing because like I could see the NFL come to this. If there's money to be made on it, then people will get in on it. That's the fact of the matter, and esports is showing itself to be a moneymaker.
Yeah, but you know, I think you won't see it in the NFL because rotisserie is just, you know, is so high right now. You know, I don't think people would pay much attention to that. I mean, also FIFA is a worldwide sport; the NFL not so much. No matter how many people are watching the Super Bowl right now, you know. There was going to be a point I was going to say, and now I forgot. It's sort of like when MMA came around, and, you know, I don't like MMA. I'd rather watch a Dota sport than MMA. Okay, this point I was going to make was that esports is the only reason that Street Fighter V exists. Because they're selling a $60 product of only 12 fighters. And here we go with the Mona Lisa / cheeseburger. And they're going to dole out those people one by one by one for full DLC price. You know, and normally you'd give away a product for free when you're doing that, but they're not. You're going to have to pay the full $60 price for half the number of fighters that you'd normally get, or maybe two-thirds, because I think Street Fighter 4 initially came with 16, and Street Fighter 5 is only coming with 12.
And people have voted with the wallets, and if they get money from these tactics or methods, then they keep doing it. So the only way to, you know, make them not do this kind of thing anymore is to not buy the DLC. But of course, you know, good luck there.
It's almost fighting games have become such a thing nowadays where it's like, you have to make the most balanced product because everyone's trying to be that game at Evo. That's what it comes down to. Everyone wants to be at Evo.
Yeah, I mean, Street Fighter V is going to get there no matter what because of Street Fighter. You know, Street Fighter's been a competitive sport for a very long time. I mean, these people, it's not that they talk about changing the tactics or the speed. They've talked about pixels.
Yeah.
There's an extra pixel here, which is going to change the hit. You know, it's like they've got the timing down to a microsecond.
Yeah. Hitboxes are real.
Yeah. Yep.
Speaking of which, there's a big controversy in a game, and it's not Counter-Strike, but it's another one in which the hitboxes have been too big and they're reducing it all. Not even going to deal with it.
Rainbow Six Siege.
That's right, yeah.
That has always been an ongoing problem for that game, mostly because you have these characters that have shields in that game, and the game has to be so pinpoint that it can detect where the shield is at every time, and it's just not yet.
I still wanted Rainbow Six Patriots to come out, damn it.
I'll tell you what, I love Rainbow Six Siege. It's great. It's okay. Probably one of the best team games I've played in a long time.
You know what? And Mass Effect 3 multiplayer is still going on really hard. I mean, people love that. And EA did not realize how big Mass Effect 3 multiplayer was going to be.
No, I don't think they ever thought it was going to be like anything people were going to be playing even 3 months after it was done.
And that, you know, people are, and the thing is that they're saying, "Oh shoot, we should have microtransactioned this a bit more." I mean, they do. I mean, they have the extra, you know, like the new characters coming out and all that stuff, but they would have, had they known, it would have been a different story to come pricing.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Nintendo cancels sleep tracking device, and this comes to us from The Verge. Nintendo's mysterious quote-unquote quality of life initiative was meant to have been launched by the end of this March, but the first product in the program isn't even going to make that date, if it ever comes out at all. CEO and President Tatsumi Kimishima... Excuse me. CEO and President Tatsumi Kimishima made a point of bringing up QOL, quality of life, I guess. I'm going to do this over again. CEO and President Tatsumi Kimishima made a point of bringing up quality of life himself during the investor Q&A session during the company's earnings released this week, saying that Nintendo doesn't have enough confidence that the sleep tracking device announced in 2014 could become a viable consumer product. That's not to say Nintendo will roll back his quality of life strategy altogether. Kimishima says he still thinks Nintendo has something to offer in this space, so we'll consider expanding the company's operations in that direction. But the announcement that the sleep tracker will never see blah, 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 you know? Mm-hmm. Okay, so going back to 2009, remember when Nintendo announced the vitality sensor, which was going to go on your finger and detect your heartbeat and your biorhythms or whatever that is? I don't know what... You see, that was when Nintendo was high off the massive sales of the Wii, and they were bringing off crap like that stupid balance board. You remember the balance board?
I remember people were insane for the Wii Fit.
And then you had, and then people realized how stupid it was when Wii Music was demoed, and that was just the downhill from the Wii after that. I still watch that. That video of E3 2009, Nintendo's thing, and I was there, and I was going to tell you something. I was in the conference, and the jaws of people were just dropping out of shock, and then Cammy came out and acted like a psychotic. She was like a psychotic daycare worker. Hi, so this is going to be the, you know, she was just a. You know, and the thing is, after she left, you know, see, she belonged to a PR agency, and after a PR agency, you know, stopped doing Nintendo, she was like, oh, phew, I don't have to do that again. So, yeah, I don't know. Nintendo, stop thinking about other stuff like this. You have more pressing problems than doing bullshit devices like this that's going to measure people's sleep rhythms.
Yeah, we don't need that.
Quality of life, or making sure. Remember the Wii Fit? Also, there was a controversy that this girl who wasn't fat, it called her fat.
Yeah, I hated that board. You call me obese, and I'm not obese. I wanted to break this stupid thing, but apparently there's a weight limit. So for anyone that's actually in the obese category, they already can't go on the Wii board.
I'll tell you who does what Nintendo is trying to do, and they don't require a console. It's Garmin, Fitbit, etc. You don't... Like, what? Where is the market for this? I don't understand it.
Well, remember, in 2007, 2008, grandmas were playing the Wii and Wii Bowling, and people who did not like consoles were playing with the Wii. But when Nintendo failed to notice it, that they weren't buying any software either. They just wanted the Wii Bowling and Wii Sports, and that was it. They didn't care about the rest. And then it started Microsoft and Sony trying to emulate it. Microsoft, their stupid eye, their stupid wand. Nintendo, I'm not going to say Kinect is stupid, but because I use it all the time. I mean, it's a great voice recognizer, and it does well in recognizing me, but it's not a gaming device. And the problem is that, you know, see, when people buy a video game console, they want to play video games. I know it's a hard concept for these companies to understand, but they want to play video games. They generally don't want to exercise, unless it's Dance Dance Revolution. You know? It's just... You know, stop trying to improve our lives. I mean, I will say that the Xbox One has taken over my TV, because now I can't watch TV without my Xbox One. Which isn't fine. I like to say, Xbox, change channel. I have to be careful, because my Xbox is on. I mean, it'll listen to what I'm saying and decide, oh, I'm going to change the channel now. Do you remember the Xbox conference in which people were watching it on live, right, through their Xbox, and the damn things kept on turning off because they kept on saying Xbox on the thing, and the Kinect was hearing them. It's like, oh, I guess I have to turn it off. Wait, don't turn it off. I'm watching that.
I'm still stuck in that time when everybody thought that their Xbox One Kinects were going to be watching them and recording information to send over to Microsoft.
Yeah, who wants that? Yeah, who wants? What strange pervert wants to watch that? That's the entire thing about people worrying about security and all that stuff. There's something called signal to noise. And when you have a noise of 5 billion and signal of 2, you know, it's like... Trust me, they don't want to know that you eat cornflakes in the morning. It's not pressing news to them. Not even advertisers care. There's a lot better ways to do it.
I think Nintendo is the kind of company that does the same thing over and over and over again.
They weren't always that. You know, up with new stuff. Of course, at the time, they were litigious as hell, but we're not going to get into that. But now they've gotten into a comfort zone, yeah.
They've shown they're still capable of good things. They did Splatoon, and that was really out of the ordinary and different. That was cool.
But here's the thing. I think if you want to really notice the change, it's when the Wii U came. Oh, not the Wii U. I mean, the Wii came out. When the Wii came out, they became bland as toast. Before that, I mean, the GameCube, and I didn't own a GameCube, but there was a lot of stuff coming out on them that was innovative. People are still talking about Resident Evil Zero to this day on the GameCube, you know? And other games, like that Silicon Knights game that Jordan couldn't shut up about. Oh, jeez, I forgot the name of it. You know, the one in which it would start screwing with your mind, you know, and say, okay, we're going to delete your heart. We're gonna turn the console off now. Or we're going to mute the sound on your TV. You know, that sort of... All this mind-fucking stuff, you know? I forgot the name of it.
What you're talking about.
Yeah, anyways, but the Wii had the GameCube had a lot of innovative stuff, and then the Wii came out, and it became really popular, and Nintendo said, you know what? You know where our new audience is? Grandmas. We're going to make games for grandma. And then they found out, you know what? None of them are buying it, and then they pissed off their core base, which you don't want to do. I mean, Nintendo has some very, very loyal people, like Paul, but even Paul has started to give up on Nintendo. It's sort of like a Star Wars fanatic saying, you know what, I don't care about Star Wars anymore. You know? And, damn, you know, it's like, you know, the Phantom Menace couldn't quell some people's opinions on Star Wars. I remember, I was telling everybody it was a piece of crap, and they were saying, no, it's really good, it's really good. I had to wait 10 years for them to say, okay, you're right, it was a piece of crap. They blamed Jar Jar Binks, but he wasn't the problem.
Nah, the entire movie was the problem.
Anyways, the writer was the problem. I'm going to leave it there. Anyways, either way, I'm going to say something shocking. I'm not too high on The Force Awakens either. We're not going to get into the discussion now. I just thought it was a straight up remake. And like I said, you know, this is sort of like Star Trek 09, you know. Okay, you establish the characters, now do something with them. Don't do Into Darkness. Where you say, you know what? We're going to do Star Trek 2 all over again, and we're going to make it faster and bigger. And because, you know, in The Force Awakens, they had the Death Star, but it was a bigger Death Star.
Yeah.
That's no space station. That's a planet.
That is definitely a can of worms that requires an entirely new episode.
But then maybe you should feel glad that J.J. Abrams is no longer attached, so he won't be able to do his magic. It'll be interesting to see where the next film goes. It's going to be someone different. Hopefully the script will be different. Because here's the thing. I've given up on Star Trek. I've given up on Star Wars. And I've actually given up on Mystery Science Theater 3000 as well. And you have to understand something. I'm member number 11363. And that's only because I didn't write in for a couple of months. That's how hardcore an MST3K fan I am. But when I heard that Felicia Day was going to be the new Forrester, I said, that's it. I'm out. Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt. Yeah, what happened to the... I prefer unknowns. Also, I wasn't going to hear there was a guy named Jonah, a guy like you and me, and it wasn't going to be me. I'm not going to have the theme song talk about a Jonah and not let it be me. Either I'm the host named Jonah or it's someone else with a different name. A Scott or a TJ or an Adam or a Ralph, you know, no Jonah. But anyway, jokes aside, you know, it's like I'm done with Star Wars. I'm done with Star Trek, and especially with Star Trek 3 or the third film coming out, which everybody's calling the Fast and the Furious Trek, which is not off the which is not because the director did the Fast and the Furious, and everything is Fast and the Furious in that trailer. And I refuse to believe it's going to be like Star Trek the Motion Picture, like they're claiming it'll be. Oh no, it's not. It's not actually like that. Bull. I've ranted enough. You may now rant in my place.
But Jonah, the third Star Trek movie had Sabotage by the Beastie Boys. It's made for my generation.
Wait a minute. Sabotage was in the 80s. Oh, wait, was it the 80s or 90s? I don't know. Although I will say it's very much a 90s movie, like extreme, you know. Maybe Rob Liefeld wrote the script.
As someone who's like, I'm used to seeing like extreme 90s stuff. Oh, that movie was like, oh my god.
Which one?
You're trying to advertise to the lowest common denominator of my generation. This is like a BMX star riding into a Star Trek set.
But they did that with Insurrection, remember?
Popping a can of Monster, chugging that.
But they tried that with Star Trek Insurrection, remember? They had the Picard and Worf in the dune buggy doing stunts. You know, and we find out that Picard actually is a speed freak. Really? Really? You feel free to toss in there, Scott. Scott, you there, or did we shame you? Scott? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Anything to throw in there?
For the
discussion we were just having.
For the sleep tracking, yeah. It's like, this seems like something that really isn't needed, and just the whole gimmicky thing, and they just need to stick to making good games again.
Scott, we were not talking about that. We were talking about Star Trek going extreme.
Oh.
Did we check out a little bit for a moment?
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. We're going to move on to the next item anyway. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Ant Simulator canceled after business partners spend crowdfunding on money and booze and strippers.
Wait, this you should from- try that again.
Oh, sorry. Ant Simulator canceled after business partners spend crowdfunding on money, booze, and strippers.
No, you're inflecting it wrong. It's Ant Simulator canceled after business partners spend crowdfunding money on booze and strippers.
Okay.
I'll take out the crowdfunding there. Let's.
Ant Simulator canceled after business partners spend money on booze and strippers. This is from Game Watcher. Over the last weekend, lead developer Eric Cherenchinsky posted a video to his YouTube channel explaining the breakdown of his business and the cancellation of his game. In the video, he says, "I recently found out that my ex-business partners were secretly stealing company money. They had secretly spent the overwhelming majority of both our Kickstarter money and Ant Simulator investment money on liquor, restaurants, bars, and even strippers. Eric is working to make sure that Ant Simulator pre-orders get refunded, while Ant Simulator itself will be canceled and tutorial series on game development will be removed from YouTube due to legal issues. He intends to stick with the game development, though. He says he'll not be trusting of even my closest friends, apparently, which is the closest I felt to literal knife in the heart while watching a YouTube video.
Yeah, so here's his claim that his partners spent all of the investment money on hookers and blow, basically. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't believe Eric when he says he was not a part of that. I find it hard to believe that he would not know or he would not see what his partners were doing.
I don't know. So he might have saw them doing it but not realized it was company money being used. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not there. You know, I can't comment on that if it's BS or not. But I didn't even know that there was another Ant Simulator game because I know there's SimAnt. I don't know if there's more details.
SimAnt is a real old game. That was from like 1995, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah,
that was a really easy ant game. At least it was easy for me.
Why you have a thing for ants?
No, just it was. I had a. I got like a bundle of sim games.
Oh, yeah, that bundle. Okay. Yeah, what did it come with? SimAnt, Sim Tower, and Sim Farm, yeah. Or something like that.
Oh. And SimCopter and Sim Island and Sim Safari.
Oh, I reviewed SimCopter way back when, and the streets of Sim City.
Yeah.
You know, I actually Ants is my favorite animated movie, or at least one of them. And that's with a Z, Ant Z. So, what about you? TJ.
The funniest news headline for 2016 so far.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be one of the WTF finalists for 2016, and it was only January when this story came out. Can you imagine being a backer of Ant Simulator then finding out that they were spending your money on hookers and booze? And
that would be very upsetting, but I'm glad that at least Eric is saying he's going to give back the money or he's going to make sure people are getting refunded. So there's at least that much respect there to be given, to at least, you know, yes.
I don't know if he's ever going to get a job again in the industry, to tell you the truth. No, I don't think so. I mean, he better just make some browser-based games or iOS games and not have his name attached to it. I'm serious, because the video game companies aren't gonna hire him. I know this for a fact. They're not gonna hire him. There's so many people they can hire. They don't need him.
Right.
And he has to self-publish now, whatever he does. And, you know, I mean, it's not impossible. I mean, look at Jonathan Blow. He did Braid all by himself. Well, not quite all by himself, but he did it majority of himself. And, you know, people are raving about The Witness, and I really don't see the appeal.
It's a puzzle game.
I know it's a puzzle game, and I love puzzle games, but this particular puzzle game, I don't see the appeal of. Anyways, that's just me editorializing. So, So in the past few weeks, we've had Project Phoenix being delayed until 2018. We've had Mighty No. 9... After it was delayed three times, ComSep said that they were going to delay it again, and then they delay it again. And then we have this news earlier in the podcast in which they just screwed it up, and people left and said, oh, we're going to go home now, and we don't know when your game's ever going to be developed. And now we have a story about a Kickstarter video game in which it's canceled because the writing partners were spending it on booze and strippers. And I think the thing that Kickstarter backers are probably most upset about is that they weren't invited to the party. So,
well, not only that, but also John Smedley had that Kickstarter a while back.
Yeah, but that was different. That was just people showing non-interest in it. And the thing is that it's still going to happen.
Yeah, he had a silent partner anyway. It will happen, but it's interesting to see that like John Smedley put his hat back in the ring and nobody cared.
Who's John Smedley? I mean, you know, I know who he is, and I'm just saying it's like, it's not like Peter Molyneux put his hat back in the ring too with Goddess Wars, in which his Kickstarter project Goddess went felt like a flat balloon. I backed it. So, and the thing is, I played it and said, okay, I'll wait until it's finished. I don't even know if it's finished. It's still in my Kickstarter. I mean, I'm not immune. I mean, I still have the Stomping Land. I haven't installed in Steam. I should go in just to see what happens, because if you play in single player, you just get killed really quickly because the dinosaurs just eat you right away.
I feel like Peter Molyneux is definitely one of those that needs to stop making games and just go away already.
No, he just needs to not talk about what his games are until they're released.
Yeah, that's the truth.
You know,
stop acting like they're the best games in the world. Yeah.
Oh, wait, you know, I still love Fable, all three of them, you know. I mean, they weren't quite what he intended, but they were still all fun. I also have Mansion Lord, which is the game that was a complete and utter ripoff, that Golgam Games never existed, and the person who got the money just ran away with the money, leaving everybody high and dry. That's why I say, if you're going to back something like Kickstarter, back board games. Because board games are basically finished when they start their Kickstarter. The Kickstarter is only to A, gauge how many people want to play, B, get the materials for the game. That's it. They finished the game.
Basically get it produced because they need to pay a factory to make the parts.
And also to ship it. You know, yeah. They need to know how many people are going to play it because, you know, those shipping costs are really expensive. And the thing is, those games are already finished. They're already finished. If you know anything about board games, they play test them until the sun burns out. They want to make sure it's perfect before they even start, you know.
And there's still people that are doing it right. I mean, I backed Yooka-Laylee.
I'll give you an example, by the way. Now, remember, Double Fine had problems with the Double Fine Adventure, which we now know as Broken Age, right?
Definitely.
I mean, they miscalculated everything. They had to do Steam Early Access, you know, to raise more money. The other game that they did, the next game they did was Massive Chalice. Boom. It was ready like a few months after it was over. I was shocked. I was like, wait, Massive Chalice is ready? It's already, yeah. It's ready, you know. The Long Dark was pretty, you know, I mean, what's it called, Scott's new favorite games, Pillars of Eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about Obsidian, the company that can't release a game that's not buggy.
And they did pretty good with the Pillars, so it wasn't, I didn't really have
well,
too much
they
interest.
Weren't, they were under no time, it was a constraint, though, with Pillars of Eternity. They could have spent a year and a half, and people said, just keep working on it. Make it good.
You know, but I played Stick of Truth, which was a little bit buggy, and I still had fun with it on the PlayStation.
It wasn't that buggy. I mean, it was fine. And that was, by the way, that was a game which Square Enix said, it's not ready yet. We're going to let you develop it more. Because remember, that game came out like 6 months to 12 months after it was supposed to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And Square Enix was a little bit wise. No, 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 no. We're not like other publishers. You released that game fixed and ready to play. No, we want to see very few day one patches for that thing. And, you know, you just got to give Obsidian time.
Yeah.
Wasteland 2. Wasteland 2. Wasteland 2, Shadowrun Returns.
Oh, yeah. Those are all excellent games.
Yeah.
And also asymmetric. Yay, asymmetric.
And by the way, I backed Pillars of Eternity for $140.
Thank you.
But it did not... That did not... you know how much I backed Psychonauts 2 for?
I don't know.
$810.
Jeez. Holy crap.
I want that. I want the backpack. I want the backpack with all the things. And also, you know, here's the thing. I've played almost every single Double Fine game there is. And I'm friends with, sort of friends with Tim Schafer. And you know, I was going to back MST3K for $1,000, but I changed my mind. So that money went... And here's the other thing. I just got a new Capital One card with no APR for the next year.
Samuel Jackson will be happy.
So I'll just pay $100 per month and be happy with my Psychonauts and get all the tchotchkes with it. I just wish I was rich. I want to be rich so that I can do those, you know, those top
tier
Kickstarter, like the $10,000 reward tier, the $20,000 reward tier. Do you ever wish you could do that and just say, yeah, I want to have my face in the game and biography and go camping with the developers and whatever wild stuff that they have for those top tier,
that would be nice, but I think a lot of people have those kind of fantasies of various things, of buying a big, huge house and go flying around the world on a high-speed jet. Yeah, join the club, you know?
DJ?
I'll say this about Schafe. He I don't care what kind of flack that guy gets. I don't care what his political beliefs or whatever his...
I don't think Tim gets any flack at all.
Oh, man. He gets a lot of crap for...
Really?
I've
not heard it.
Especially for Broken Age, because he took so long to make it.
Oh, please. Well, here's the thing about Broken Age, by the way. That Kickstarter project was never really to release an adventure game per se. The entire point was to do a documentary on development of a video game.
Yeah.
And then the tail wagged the dog. And the development, the documentary did come out, and it's on YouTube. Anybody who wants to watch it, it's really fascinating because you get to see the highs and lows of the development of Broken Age.
Right. And I'll say this. Anyone who doesn't know what they're talking about will look at Tim Schafer and says, that guy just mooches off of Kickstarter money. Anyone who's seen what Tim Schafer does over the past decades knows that that guy has never made crap.
His first game, I believe, was Maniac Mansion.
Yes.
And that was in 1980. Well, I want to say 7, but I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up.
Anyone who knows that guy's story knows that Tim Schafer doesn't make bad games.
Brutal Legend, no. If I wanted to play a real-time strategy game, I would have bought a real-time strategy game. I will say that I'm going to give it a second chance because I recently got it as part of a Humble Bundle like 2 years ago, Brutal Legend, so I'm going to try it again, see if my opinion has changed.
Hot take on Brutal Legend, I love that game. I don't play it for
all of his games support. Have had perfect endings.
Yeah.
Perfect endings. Especially, you know, I finished Broken Age, and I can see why people complain about the puzzles in the second half. They're really, really, really difficult. But that game ended perfectly, even though the medium part was okay. You know, Psychonauts was probably the least satisfying ending, but it was still better than most things. Grim Fandango's ending was perfection. Full Throttle's ending was perfection. And the thing is that every single one of his games are getting remastered now. You have David the Tentacle getting remastered. The only thing that isn't being remastered right now is Maniac Mansion. That's the only game that is not being remastered. And it's coming with David the Tentacle, though unremastered as well.
And that's the point, is that like you can say that there's problems with his games. You can say that they're not your cup of tea, but he doesn't make bad games.
Unless you're really bored with his love of gears and hot rods and decals and rock and roll. Because I tell you this, he's very much a really big kid, and I'm not. It's not one of those things. Well, he's a big kid. No. Tim Schafer is a big kid. He's a big 10-year-old with a beard. You know, he's a bearded 10-year-old kid. That's basically who he is, and he's sort of the kind of guy who says, "Oh, cool," you know, like a 10-year-old. He's actually, you know, it's not a surprise that Jack Black is in his games now. Because that's basically who he is. He's Jack Black, except for real. So anyways, getting away from the Tim Schafer love fest. You know, I bet Tim Schafer would have loved to have been at the party with the booze and strippers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so long as it was his own money and not the Kickstarter funders' money. It's funny because now, I don't know. Like I said, you really have to do research, but even then, you know, and here's the thing about Kickstarter, and people seem to forget this, it is not a pre-order service, it is investment, and sometimes investments don't happen.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to give you, you know, this game from before, oh damn, I forgot the name of it already, I have to scroll up, because, I didn't even have it, it wasn't even a news item, that's right. Anyway, the game, you know, the game by Playdeck and, you know, the guy who's doing this shit. I forgot the name of it. Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. Unsung Story. Unsung Story might have been one of those games that starts development, you know, they spend $200,000 and it's not working, and it gets canceled, you know? I remember I was disappointed that Sid Meier started a game called Dinosaurs. It's going to be a Sid Meier dinosaur game. Mm-hmm. You know, a strategy game in which you he dropped it because it simply wasn't fun, according to him. You know, a lot of games are put forward, worked on a little bit, and then get dropped because they aren't working. And this could have been Unsung Story. Could have been one of those games. Had it not been Kickstarter funded, it would have just said, "Oh, sucks to be this game. We're just going to drop it and move on to something else." So the question of the week this week is: what is your favorite strategy game? And this can be turn-based. It can be real-time. Can be, you know, either one. So go ahead, Scott. We all, well, actually, you know, I know you belong to the Polycast, but it isn't your favorite turn-based game isn't necessarily Civ, is it?
Well, strategy.
It's Civ, okay.
It is Civ. Yeah.
Okay, but which one? Okay, we'll pin you down. Which Civ?
You know, I've been replaying Civ 4 recently.
Really?
And there are some things I liked about it, but there are things now, having played so much of Civ 5, that I understand why they made that change and that maybe it really was necessary to do one unit per tile, but maybe do a little bit more detailed layer, like where you can have a melee and a ranged unit at the same time might be a better idea. But I, you know, there's still a lot of things about, again, Civ 4 that I like.
Well, Civ 4 is a bigger game, really, if you think about it, than Civ 5.
And all those scenarios, it has a lot more detail on the information that you can see what different resources are doing. And you could say, like, if you had ivory, that would speed up your Statue of Zeus, or if you had copper, that would speed up your Statue of Colossus, and, you know, and so on. And I also liked the corporations, and I liked I liked the way religion worked in that one. But also, you know, it's like, so it's a little bit tricky to really say, but I kind of still like Civ 4.
I will say 5. It took me a long while for Civ 5 to win me over. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, it took all the way to Brave New World for it to win me over. For me, I think I'm going to give it a little bit. You know, it's kind of hard. Thing is that Heroes of Might and Magic is, I don't think it's quite a strategy game. I think it's an RPG more than a strategy game. So I'm not going to include it. I'm going to say, you see, for real-time strategy, I would have said Kohan and Mortal Sovereigns, but I'm going to say for strategy, actually, it would be another Sid Meier game, and that's Railroad Tycoon. It has to be.
I like Railroad Tycoon. That's a good game.
Yeah. And in second place would be Colonization, another Sid Meier game.
Yeah.
and not the remake, by the way, the original Colonization.
Right.
Because the remake is so tough. I mean, the original game was difficult, but the remake is tough beyond belief. How about you, TJ? What is your favorite strategy game?
Strategy game? Did we already talk about XCOM 2 yet?
Okay, so you're going to say XCOM 2.
That's fine.
Before we get to that, I would like to say Endless Legend is one of the most interesting things I've come across lately. It's so damn cool. I love me some Civilization. I love most of Sid Meier's strategy offerings. But Endless Legend is very interesting how
it's different from Endless Space, isn't it? Endless Legend. Wait, isn't Endless Legend the RPG, not the.
Oh, no. It's a 4X game.
Oh, okay. But it's a fantasy 4X game. See, I have Endless Space on my Steam list that I have not opened yet. And I have to give it a try at some point because they're coming out with... is it Endless Space? Yeah, it's Endless Space 2 that they're coming out with.
Endless Legend is just interesting because it has that sort of element of the Civilization games where you pick your faction and they each serve a different purpose in the world. But it also has...
Now you're reminding me of Master of Orion 2.
Yeah. But it also has this extra aspect to it where, like, the world is dying and you have to figure out how to get around that in every set of turns.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very novel concept, is that you're not just fighting other factions, but you're fighting the world around you as it becomes harder and harder to survive in.
Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us your comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or at the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum. Or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter. That's at Alpha Shard on Twitter. And, you know, TJ, we don't know your Twitter name. So,
sure, you can find me at Johnny Chugs on Twitter.
You have to spell that. Is that one G or two?
That's capital JOHNNY capital CHUGS.
Okay, so it's just one G. Got it.
Yep.
And we don't want to know what Johnny chugs. We're not going to do any beer placement ads. So anyways.
He chugs anything.
Oh dear. We're going to have to get Paul to play with us sometime. We will see you next week.
Have fun. Happy gaming, everyone.
Yeah, this was great. Thanks for having me on.
It was good to meet you, TJ.
Yes, sir.